Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update here on a Friday morning. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Well, it's good to be back with you. I'm glad to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much. Hope your Shavuos was remarkable. Hope it was wonderful.
It was very nice.
There you go. And a clear warning to Syria, according to the New York Times, to stop the transfer of advanced weapons to Islamic militants in the region. A senior Israeli official signaled on Wednesday that Israel was considering additional military strikes to prevent that from happening, and that the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, would face crippling consequences if he retaliated. The Israeli official said, and I quote, "Israel is determined to continue to prevent the transfer of advanced weapons to Hezbollah. The transfer of such weapons to Hezbollah will destabilize and endanger the entire region." If Syrian President Assad reacts by attacking Israel, according to this official, or tries to strike Israel through his terrorist proxies, he will risk forfeiting his regime, for Israel will retaliate. Malcolm, is Israel bluffing? And is it possible that Syria might call their bluff?
Israel's not bluffing because they already did it. And they've done it more than once. And they have been very effective in what they're doing. But the goal is not to remove Assad and not to interfere in the civil war, but to deal with Israel's strategic need, which is to prevent sophisticated weapons, whether they be missiles or chemical weapons or other things that could be game changers for Hezbollah. Reaching Hezbollah, and as they get word and by the various means by which they can watch what is transpiring inside Syria, and when things begin to move, they will act. And what they're saying is that if Syria decides to retaliate, and there are various methods by which they have said they would, one is by opening up the border to the Golan to terrorist organizations. Two is to enable Hezbollah to attack from the Golan. Three is by rocket fire or mortar fire. There were two shells that fell on the Hermon over Yontif, and the Israelis believe it was really random fire, but one of the terrorist groups said it has to do with the revenge for the Nakba, which is was celebrated by the Palestinians. It's just their day of tragedy when Israel was created. So the message is a clear one.
Yeah, but there,
and it's a message also to Russia, which is saying that they're going ahead with the sale of the S-300, which is create a defense system and enable Syria to hit planes 60 miles away, limiting Israel's ability to react. And also the very advanced anti-ship missiles, which are already on their way. These things getting into the hands of Hezbollah would create a very different situation for Israel to defend itself.
Back to the potential bluff, it is the first time that in any way Israel has publicly spoken about the Syrian president forfeiting his regime, right? And that they'll make sure to take care of that.
They said that he puts it at risk and that he could lose it, because if they have to retaliate with full force, it certainly could shift the balance or remove him from the scene, enabling the rebels to win. Again, that's not Israel's goal, but they cannot be put in a position where they either can't retaliate or where they cannot prevent these transfers. Assad has said he will allow Hezbollah to have everything he has in appreciation for their support. There have been other developments that we have seen, and by the way, I think the army of Assad has been doing better lately and has consolidated its hold on certain areas, certainly around Damascus, and recaptured some other areas, and there are large numbers, estimated as many as 60,000 Alawites, who are coming from militias. These are groups trained by Hezbollah in Iran, who have now joined and bolstered the army, which is tired and depleted somewhat. This gives them a lot of additional fire. They've lost people from the Syrian army to al-Nusra because from the rebel groups to al-Nusra because of the lack of weapons, lack of materiel and funding. But and al-Nusra is gaining at the same time that the Syrian army is gaining, shaping up this the possible showdown. They've also created some strongholds, and there are other methods that they've used trying to cut off the rebels from any supply routes. So the situation there is definitely in flux. It's not a slam dunk that Assad is going to fall, as people thought, in a short period or even in the foreseeable future.
You would have preferred, I would assume, as we've discussed in the past, that this Israeli official not have called the New York Times with this report?
Well, it's not consistent with what Netanyahu said when he was in Russia. They're issuing stern warnings. No, I'm not upset that he said it. It's not a line that has not been used in various forms before. The Israelis, as I said, have very high stakes in this, and I think that that it was an answer to some of the threats that were emanating from Assad's circles, that Israel was putting down the markers saying, don't think you're going to start allowing them to shoot at us from the Golan, and that you're going to sit in Damascus and not pay a price for it.
Right. You mentioned Assad's army doing better. I mean, we've read over the last couple of days some of the methods that are used in order to forcefully take down the other side. It's already gotten the attention of the United Nations, shockingly enough. So the methods that he's using, or that his armies are using, are quite appalling.
Well, it seems that both sides are using pretty appalling methods, but he certainly is responsible for the larger part of the deaths, estimated now at over 80,000, and on some saying already 100,000 people who have been killed. The use of chemical weapons has been disputed, but it seems that there's a general consensus now that it was used at least in limited fashion by the Syrian army. The increase in weaponry and firepower, and the fact is that they killed regardless of men, women, and children. There's no limits. You know, Israel gets taken to task when it operates in such a pinpoint fashion and with such precision, and putting itself at risk not to have civilian casualties on the other side, shooting from within civilian populations. And here Assad is, and the forces allied with him, Iran, even the Russians who are backing him, are responsible for these massacres of tens of thousands of people, and the international community isn't incapable of acting in any way. And it's certainly sending a message to every terrorist group, to every would-be dictator, that you can get away with it. I mean, there's no price to pay.
So how strong or weak was the statement by the United Nations?
It was very weak. It was a resolution. It carries no weight because they can't get a resolution because China and Russia will veto it. The British said that they would double down on their arms supply. The United States is still not willing to put weapons in, and they're not sure who you're giving the weapons to and where they're going to end up. And we see that many of the groups who are fighting, the rebel groups, are not groups we want to be associated with, and that the Free Syrian Army is also not proven itself. So, it's very hard to see who you're going to give the weapons to, and without really stringent controls, we don't want to see what happened in Libya and other places where the weapons get turned on us and end up being used against Israel. And
right.
It's why Israel is so sensitive about these weapon shipments.
Was Netanyahu even close to successful regarding convincing Putin to stop these sales?
So far, it does not appear so, nor was Secretary Kerry and others who have tried to convince Putin not to go ahead. He said this is a long-standing deal and they're going to live up to their commitments. The one consolation is that it would take time until it's delivered, installed, and you have to train the people. Now, unless the Syrians have been undergoing training in Russia secretly all along and are really prepared to operate the systems, it would be some time before they would be in place. And frankly, I think one of the messages Netanyahu may have given is, if you do this, understand we're going to have to take it out if they deploy it.
So,
and Putin has his own agendas. You know, he said all the right things about Israel and Israel's the relationship with Israel, but his actions belie it.
Speaking of the right things about Israel, the Prime Minister of Canada doesn't stop his amazing rhetoric, does he?
He is quite amazing, and he was attacked by one of the newspapers. Somebody wrote one of the newspapers is rabidly pro-Israel, and the answers that appeared in some of the Toronto paper and elsewhere is remarkable. And he doesn't care. He is doing it as a matter of principle. It's certainly doesn't gain him much votes. You know, there's a poll that shows the only country which had pro-Israel numbers these days is the United States. Not even not even Canada anymore really shows positive numbers. Majorities in France, Germany, and China had negative attitudes towards Israel. Certainly, all the countries in the region had about 83% plus. But they also view the United States in many places negatively. Only country where the United States is viewed overwhelmingly positively is in Israel.
By the way, no surprise to you, we have people north of the border who listen to this segment on a regular basis, and it's good to mention this because if they would in fact tell the Prime Minister and inform him that they appreciate how much he's out there supporting Israel, it could only be something that's you know, looked upon favorably. So if you have an opportunity, Toronto, Montreal, and all the other great cities up in Canada, make it known to your Prime Minister how much he is appreciated. Could you describe the Golan to us now? What is the north and northeastern border of Israel like right now?
It's quiet. Israel is on high alert there. They've reinforced their presence there. The ban on air traffic, everything has been lifted. So visitors are still going to the Golan. There's a stray shell that flies across, but nothing that has done any damage. And right now it's quiet. The on the other side of the border, you know, the Syrian army has largely withdrawn, and we have seen the presence of some of the rebel groups, many of which are Islamist and terrorist organizations, but they have not approached the border, and Israel is making sure to try to keep them distant from it.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope. Rockland County now at 91.9 on the FM dial. Good morning, Rockland. Around the world on the web, jmnam.org. Back to our regular schedule the day after Shavuos. Full week of JMNAM begins Monday morning starting at 6 a.m. Make sure to join us. Malcolm, when you heard about the IRS scandal, and now we see there's going to be a second resignation in regard to the a report that they were targeting certain right-wing conservative groups, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure you have been informed over the years, or at least you've heard accusations over the years from certain people where they felt that pro-Israel groups were targeted specifically by the IRS for audits and for a tough time. Did this enhance the possibility in your mind that that actually happened years ago?
Well, it certainly has happened periodically, but I know that there were references in some of the stories that this was also about Israel or pro-Israel
right.
groups. There was one instance of a group that claims that it was unduly harassed and treated unfairly by the IRS in extending and repeatedly questioning them, but there is no other organization that has come forward, and I have tried to find out if other organizations have been similarly affected, and so far we have not ascertained that there is any pattern towards pro-Israel or Jewish organizations being singled out. But it's something we're obviously always monitoring and looking for. But the scandal itself tells you how the system can be manipulated and how high it can go in amongst authority figures. So it's something that we all should be concerned about.
When you say how high it can go, are you anticipating we'll find out that there may be more that the White House knew about this?
I think that there may be more people in the White House who knew about this.
Right. Let's go to the Iranian elections for a moment. We keep reading about the potential for some surprise candidates toward the end of this campaign.
So here's a very interesting thing. You know that the choice is obviously up to the Supreme Leader about who runs, but he uses the Guardian Council, which he appoints, as the vetting body.
Right.
And they have approved several candidates, amongst them Vayati, who used to be the foreign minister, a doctor who once treated the Supreme Leader and he has trust, one of those named in warrants by the Interpol for his involvement with the bombings in Argentina. Same with Rafsanjani, who is now trying to join as a candidate, but it was being threatened, along with Ahmadinejad's former aide, Mashali, who is also trying to run. they will may well be knocked off the list for various reasons. Rafsanjani also faces this indictment. And that was why Iran was trying to make a deal with Argentina, which they've been negotiating and obviously couldn't conclude, where I think which would have cleansed some of these people. The other key candidate, Jalili, who was the negotiator and for Iran, but I would say the front runner would have to be Valiati probably right now. Yeah, but it's reflective of the divisions, both the division between Ahmadinejad and Khamenei, and also the divisions within. Rafsanjani, who was 79, served as prime minister for many years and was a president. The others have served in government. There is a lot of feeling amongst the people that they are dissatisfied with the candidates, and you may well see, contrary to what media saying, efforts on the streets, the demonstrations. Again, the Iranians are working day and night to prevent any kind of manifestations like last time, the Green Revolution. But we'll have to see whether the people still react to this. There's no candidate really enjoys wide popular support, I would say. But obviously the big choice is Khamenei, and he'll make sure his candidate wins.
What I always ask you, I always forget, the date of the election?
It's June 14th.
Sharif.
But on Tuesday, we're going to find out who the candidates are. But what was interesting is that when Rafsanjani and Moshali got announced it, they were threatened with violence for even entering the process. The former mayor of Tehran was another one of the candidates who has placed his name in. There were like 600 or more candidates. They ruled also that no women can be candidates for president.
There's a surprise. Sharif wins in Pakistan, right?
Sharif won.
No surprise there, correct?
Well, nobody knew for sure, but yeah, it looked pretty obvious.
And Erdogan is planning on visiting the Gaza Strip.
Yes, and he may be joined by President Morsi of Egypt, who probably doesn't want Erdogan to go there alone and get the credit. He just visited the United States. He appeared with the president at a press conference yesterday. Well, I didn't see it, obviously, because of Yanta, but I did hear enough about it where it does not appear that they ended up necessarily on the same page. Erdogan's visit, which is strongly opposed by the United States, so he put it off until after his trip. And I know they tried to dissuade him, as did Abbas, try to dissuade him from going, but clearly he has his own agenda and is going ahead with the visit. He has expressed disappointment with the reaction of the West on Turkey. He's very adamant about removing Assad. He also violated another one of the principles of the negotiations between Israel and Turkey when Comoros, a small country in Africa, announced yesterday that they were going to the International Criminal Court to bring a case against Israel on the Mavi Marmara, on the incident in Gaza with the ships, and claiming that Israel, I guess, violated international law, maybe even war crimes. But what's interesting is that they were represented by a Turkish firm, law firm. So it's clear that this was set up by Turkey and Comoros, because they're a member of the International Criminal Court, which Israel isn't, U.S. isn't, is bringing this case. It's not believed by most legal experts that it will go very far, but it is continuing evidence that that Turkey has not moved in terms of the relationship with Israel. They're asking huge amounts of money. What is interesting is inside Turkey now, the Syrian refugees who are there are fleeing. Some of them are going back into Syria from Turkey, and others are saying they can't show their faces since the bombings that took place, which they linked to the Syrian regime. But the anti-Syrian refugee atmosphere is so tense, and many people were beaten up, and because of that, they can't show their faces in public, and that adds to the tension and the concerns that Erdogan has to deal with. That he knows that this is very unpopular at home, and that this thing is dragged on. He wants to see more international action, especially U.S. providing weapons.
And this is all after the overtures by Israel, and to an extent by the United States as well.
Not to an extent. It was the U.S. that brokered it.
Right.
Kerry was there several times, and the president received him yesterday. And there is nothing redeeming about the Erdogan. He's trying to spread his Islamist message. He's failed in his outreach to a lot of countries. Now he's trying again with, as did Iran. He's trying again now with maybe with President Morsi. But Morsi himself is facing a lot of difficulties in Egypt. And we saw yesterday 7 Egyptian security guys kidnapped, officers kidnapped in the northern Sinai near Israel. And he is trying to consolidate his hold on the executive. The Muslim Brotherhood is increasingly unpopular amongst many of the Egyptians. The judiciary, because it dismissed the election of the parliament, so the upper house is trying to pass legislation, but he can't get through his Islamist agenda. So right now they're focusing on replacing ministers, taking control, consolidating their hold on the army and in the media, and then looking to try and keep the party together for the next election.
I asked you about the northern border a few minutes ago. Now tell me about the border in Gaza. I read a couple of very interesting, some humorous articles over the last couple of days about what's going on regarding the tunnels and the border in general, Egypt, Gaza, Israel. How would you describe it?
Yes, you know, they make fun by talking about them bringing in KFC, you know, chicken right across through the tunnels and having a delivery system where it takes them 4 hours to get the, right, to get the pizza delivered. But it's not funny because these are working overtime. We're seeing more and more weapons, still weapons from Libya, going to the Sinai and going into to Gaza. So the situation in both places is very serious. The Palestinian Authority is having more and more problems. They just recently banned a group of kids who played in a soccer game that was sponsored by the EU because they played against Israel. The Hamas is saying that they'll have in 3 months some sort of a unity government. It's not likely to be the case, but the tensions within the PA continue.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's unbelievable how, in the chicken article, and anybody who wants to see it, it was a New York Times article, you could look it up, they're describing the activity through these tunnels as if it's, you know, as if it's, there's freedom down there to do whatever you want.
Well, there is. The Egyptian government has closed and destroyed several hundred of them, but there are, you know, at times 1,100, 1,200. They go, they're contracted under license from Hamas. They get a percentage of whatever goes through. I don't know if they pay on the chicken, but on everything else. And you know, people dismiss it, but it's very significant. And Egypt has seen that the blowback to Egypt is dangerous. But we've also seen in the Palestinians this focus on the Temple Mount. There was a meeting in Cairo the past week of the Arab League, but they are inciting the people, saying that, and including Jordan, which has taken the parliament in Jordan wants to take steps to call back the ambassador, and both the Israeli ambassador in Jordan and the Jordanian ambassador in Israel, over the Judaization of Temple Mount and claiming that they want to replace Al-Aqsa. It's the same stuff that they have done all the time to rile the people, and now in this, the mood is so, the religious extremist mood all over is very greatly so in Syria, where they dismantled the tomb of a Shiite holy site, and because these guys believe that there shouldn't be any markers anyway, they destroy cemeteries, everything, including in Saudi Arabia, which in Medina, where you once had the largest Jewish population at the time.
Wow.
All the cemeteries, everything that marked Christian or Jewish sites have been destroyed. They take all the markers off and anything that is a remembrance, because they say you shouldn't have any of these sites. But they're feeding this Sunni-Shiite battle, which I said many times on the show, that people should watch it. That is the core today of what we're seeing. All the fights, if you look what's happening in the whole region, it's all boiling down. Iraq is today destabilizing and being caught in the same battle between the Sunnis and Shiites. Iran and Turkey, I mean, down the line, these battles are more and more coming down along two sides. You have additional factors, but the Sunni-Shiite battle is at the core.
And if you're Christian or Jewish, there won't be any room for you in any of these places.
Well, there's already no, the Christians are being eliminated, and the Jews were long ago out of all of these countries, but they would like to eliminate it from the one place where the Jews still are.
Right. I saw a book review of of conditions of Christians in Egypt, which you've spoken about a million times. I mean, it's just horrendous.
And you know what else? The people are going to be afraid. The Russians said it this week about what happens when all these guys who have gone to Syria, the foreign fighters, go back and become then jihadists in their own countries. Mm. And I mean, that's got to be something that scares the French, the British, the Irish, the Russians, and others, who where they have even a couple hundred guys. When those guys go back, and you notice this week the revelation, I think it was yesterday, in fact, about the cigarette smuggling group that was arrested, 15
right.
people. And you know that how many times I spoke on this show why people should take seriously about homegrown, the domestic efforts of terrorist groups and how they raise money. Usually it was Hezbollah that had been making $500, $600 million a year in illicit cigarette sales in the United States. This group was Hamas-affiliated, and one of the members even was tied to the guy who killed Ari Halberstam and to the blind sheikh.
Right.
But you see that it yielded countless amounts of money, probably hundreds of millions of dollars, that is raised through this one thing. And now there's an extensive study that's going to be released that shows the Hezbollah's involvement in the drug, in illicit drugs and, you know, generic drugs, creating false drugs that are not real, but marketing them in Europe and in South America and in the United States, which yield billions of dollars to them. So when you ask, how can they afford to do all these things around the world, and it's not just in Lebanon or in Syria, they're getting this money, and they're raising money from Americans, Canadians, from let alone from South Americans and elsewhere.
What was the estimate on the cigarette ring? How much was...
They don't know the real numbers, but it's this Virginia-New York route, which we've talked about many times, because it's not the first time this has been caught. This is but this was a massive ring, and it probably yielded at least $100 million, and maybe much more.
Finally, Malcolm, a lot of us are very concerned about what's happening within Israel itself. I'm sure you are as well, as you view some of the things going on. Let's start with this one. The battle over the chief rabbinate and how the chief rabbi will be appointed and who eventually will be appointed. Do you see this as going down in a very difficult battle to the end?
I do. Another one of the candidates, Rabbi Igra, dropped out last night. It's reflective of other problems. It's not just the question of who gets elected. I think it's very unfortunate. Maybe there will be changes in the laws about it, but I would hope that calmer heads would get together, decide on somebody who can really serve the purpose, help unite the Israelis at a time when we see so many divisions along religious and other lines, and play a very positive role. We've had it in the past. Many great people have served as chief rabbis. And I hope that that will be the case now.
You know, we've just concluded a holiday whose central theme is unity. I mean, most holidays really have a central
That's
theme.
Right,
of
most holidays.
But this one. Right, this one in particular. Right. And we are in this period of time, and we know that just days ago there was conflict at the Kotel Maravi, the Western Wall, which is, of course, so significant in our history and is right next to the most holy spot in Jewish history, the Temple Mount. I don't have an answer to all this. I don't want you to think that I'm a good armchair observer of what's going on. But it seems that this strategy of head-to-head conflict and the way that it escalated and the way the world is looking at it and the way Israelis are looking at it is not the right approach. Anything you can say to shed some light on this issue?
Well, any light I could shed, I've tried to shed on it. But the you know, one has to look at how the world looks at it. And how, when that incident again at the Kotel, how it was portrayed in the media here, I made front page of the newspaper,
right.
At a time when we see Israel being delegitimized from the outside with Stephen Hawking's
right.
decision not to go to Israel, the Church of Scotland saying we have no ties to it, even though they backed off a little bit, the Oberlin College, case after case, day after day, literally every single day, when the efforts to undermine the Jewish claim, the Jewish status, the Jewish stake in Israel, and the security, by that, the security of the state, when we do it to ourselves, it's certainly unforgivable. It never was forgivable. We've always paid a high price for the internal disunity. And frankly, anybody who sows those seeds has to be held to account. I mean, people on all sides of these issues, there are people who are really well-intentioned, who have real concerns. There are ways to address it. Violence is never the way. Provocation is never the way. They've got to be addressed in constructive ways. I know Sharansky has tried to do it. It looks like his solution is falling apart. But we have to look at this, you know, step back and take a look at what price we're going to pay for all of this. We've got to reestablish, and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what God looks first and foremost from us, for everything he does for us, is the unity of the Jewish people.
And you know what scared me? I read at some point since Yontif ended, now they're circling the calendar, because this is always a Rosh Chodesh confrontation, or at least it seems that way, that it's going to be...
It is based on Rosh Chodesh.
Right, it's based on Rosh Chodesh, and that's 3 weeks from now. And I say to myself, my God, you know, it's the enemy that usually sits with a calendar and circles certain dates. In fact, you mentioned one of them earlier today, you know, when they'll attack, when they'll rally, when they'll protest, when they'll, you know, take violent action. This is not the way. I don't have an answer, but this is not the way.
You know, there was during the period also a report that came out about the Mohammed al-Dura case. You know, the little boy was seen by his father, where they show that this was not legitimate, that it was staged.
Mm-hmm.
The report, I hope, will come out in full, done by a team of experts. I'm sorry it took them so long to do it, Israeli experts, but, you know, it shows how far the libel of the Jewish people has gone. And the intensity of this campaign, which should never be dismissed. You know, there's so many good things happening. Israel found a new gas field. You look at the on Yom Yerushalayim, what we have to celebrate, how much Jerusalem has been developed, how far it has come. And yet, we undermine all of that. That is even more unforgivable. It's one thing, the things that we can't control, that we can't deal with. But I think these things, and when we're facing, you know, an Iran that is increasingly aggressive, the region where the Muslim Brotherhood on the move, when they, if you put it in those
countries, on all
everybody
sides
has to step back and say, God, we can't afford this.
And they're coming from all sides, every direction.
Every direction, internally, externally, abroad, and the level of the threats, whether it's, you know, chemical warfare or missiles or the Russian sales of these advanced weapons, and the Iran moving all the time closer and closer. They just finished two rounds of negotiations. The absolute failures. Nothing happened. But what did they do? They set up another meeting and buying time, moving ahead all the time while we're focused on, and the world is focused on other things. They're moving ahead constantly towards the goal. You see what's happening in Egypt and elsewhere in the region, and that should be enough of an impetus, an incentive, aside from the positive reasons why we should be together.
By the way, I'm glad you mentioned Hawkins. I wanted to bring it up as well today. He just caved into pressure, or
he caved into pressure, but his arguments are ridiculous. And the most ironic thing is that the system running the special equipment he has is based on Israeli technology.
Oh my gosh!
And it's really quite ridiculous.
I assume that's been revealed to him at some point.
Oh,
right?
yes, it's been made public. Oh, yeah. But you know, it's people who control him. It's people who, you know, he claims it wrote to him. And I think there have been some very articulate answers to him that made the case about the one liberal democracy in the whole region, and that's the one he chooses not to go, not to a political conference, but to an academic conference, semi-academic conference,
right.
The Paris conference, where he would have had a chance to say whatever he wanted to say. Nobody limits him.
Right.
And yet he chose to make this public declaration. And we see others. We see people in the entertainment world and others,
yeah.
Which is why our programs to bring these people to Israel is even more important. And we have to sustain it, because it's the only way to expose the lies.
No question about it. Well, we're back speaking during the weekly update, but we still haven't solved the world's problems. How that's possible.
One at a time.
One at a time is right. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Will reconvene a week from today, Friday morning, with the weekly update right here at JM and the AM.